Okay, we've still got an hour to go for you of open lines, plus the superhuman line, which is 818-817-0021. So we'll be back in a moment and get things going on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. If anybody's out there and you have a trumpet, I would like you to call in because I just want to hear a trumpet tonight. Superhuman line, you're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hello, George, am I on?
Yes, sir. You sure?
Yes, I'm Gerald. I'm calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great, Gerald. Thank you.
I have a story. It's kind of a bad story, and I want to preface this story by saying that I had no intent to harm anybody other than myself on this particular incident.
Okay.
But it didn't occur that way. When I was 16 years old, it was on my 16th birthday, and I was kind of a latchkey kid that nobody was ever home, and I'd stay home all the time. And I had acquired a pretty bad habit at that time of huffing gasoline or inhaling the vapors of gasoline.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, and it would make me hallucinate.
Yes.
And I was in a very depressed state of life. And on my 16th birthday, I decided I was going to take my own life. And I went and I took my stepfather's .45 out of his office drawer. And I went out back. We had horses behind our home. This was a home down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to go out in the horse pasture and basically finish myself. And our next door neighbors, the woman that lived there, she was kind of had a bad attitude and was always picking on me and stuff. And she saw me walking across the yard in the evening, and she started hollering at me out the on her porch.
And when you say hollering, like, hi, how are you,
no,
or just screaming?
More like, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, I'm going to tell your stepfather. And,
oh, my gosh, you know, okay. What you needed to hear, right?
Right, and here I am, I've got a .45 in my hand. And she started doing that, and they had this brand-new Monte Carlo SS sitting there. And I said, well, I'm just going to get away from here. That's what I'm going to do. And I went to her door with the gun, and I knocked on the door, and I pointed the gun at her and told her I wanted her car keys.
Oh, man.
And she screamed and everything else, and she told me to put that toy down, thinking I had a toy revolver,
yeah.
And I turned around and I fired a round into the tree behind me and turned it back around and pointed at her. And when I did, she started panicking, and she threw her car keys at me, and I took the car keys and went out to the car, and the gasoline had affected my motor movement so much that I could not get the key into the door of the car to unlock the car.
Unbelievable.
So I grabbed the barrel of the pistol, and I started swinging at the car, and I broke the buttstock, and the spring to operate the hammer came out. The pistol was pretty much useless, so I dropped it on the ground. I got into the car because I broke the window. And I got into the car, and I drove away. I got about 20 miles away from there before I encountered my first police officers. And the only person I was intending on harming that night was myself. And this first police officer, when I saw him, he actually drove by me, not noticing I was the car that they had been sent to go intercept. And I panicked, and I went flying across this big four-lane road, and I wound up going just south of Jacksonville, Florida. There's a truck stop there. I think it's a 76 or whatever, and there's a road called 210, and I ran down that road about 12 miles with two police officers chasing me at speeds 120, 130 miles an hour.
Man.
And it's a zigzagging, real tight corners you can't hang on road.
Oh,
and they stuck right on me. Got to the truck stop, and I ducked into the truck stop, and like in a movie, I started going in between the trucks, dodging the cops. I wound up ending up on Interstate 95. And for the next 4 hours, I was involved in a car chase with all kinds of Florida Highway Patrolmen, which did a marvelous job. They had at least 15, 20 roadblocks that I did everything I could do to avoid, and I continued running because I was just scared. And I ran all the way to the International Airport in Jacksonville, Florida. And I was thinking that I would get to the airport and go take me an airplane and run away. You know, I was a 16-year-old kid.
No money, nothing to buy a ticket, right?
Well, no. By now, I knew how bad of a situation I was in. I was in a commando mode. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I went into the airport and suddenly realized I had thought I had that firearm still with me. I was going to use it to try to scare people so I could force my way aboard an airplane.
God,
but
you weren't thinking at all. You weren't thinking. No, go ahead.
It was not good at all, but I realized I didn't have the weapon, and I turned back around, and all the police were coming in there, and we missed each other by mere inches as I left. And they chased me all the way to Georgia. And there's a place in Georgia called St. Mary's, Georgia. And there's a little bridge on this road. See, they wouldn't allow me back on the interstate. And I wound up on this back secondary road. And right before I got to Georgia, a police officer attempted to do a pit maneuver on my automobile. And we collided back and forth. And he wound up having an accident, which, you know, I didn't even strike his vehicle. He struck my vehicle three times before I attempted to recover the vehicle. And I came across this bridge going into St. Mary's, and there was all these police officers ahead. I could see blue lights for days. And there's this little dirt road I could see just made out at the end of the bridge. And I ran down there, and I got on that dirt road. I must have ran about 2 miles, and in the distance I could see this one street light, a stop sign, and it looked like an intersection. As I approached it real slow, and I came to a stop, and two police officers, one came across the front of my vehicle, and one pulled up to the other side. They both swung their vehicles in, they both jumped out, and they unloaded both their revolvers into the automobile side doors. And when they did, I stepped on the gas and turned real hard to the left, you know, and now I'm running scared because they're shooting at me. And I ran about another, I guess, half a mile, and there were several other police officers that joined the chase, and they were continuously firing their firearms into the back of the automobile. I could hear the glass breaking around me, and I could hear the bullets passing by me. At the end, after all this occurred and they arrested me and everything else, I got to see the automobile, and in the speedometer, there were three bullet holes in the speedometer. And if you think you're sitting in an automobile, they're shooting from the back, and there's bullet holes in the speedometer, it would have passed through the seat that I was sitting in, yet no bullet touched me.
Nothing.
Nothing. Now, at the end of the chase, the police officers in Georgia were really riled, and I understand why they were. They continued to fire into the car, and then they told me to surrender. And when they did, I was laying on the floor of the car, balled up in a fetal position.
Were you panicking?
I was praying. And praying for some sort of intervention to help me out of this situation. I was so scared. And they told me to put my hands out of the automobile. And when they did, and I jumped up and I put my hands out, they started firing again into the car. So I crawled back down into the floorboard and I wouldn't move.
Is it like Bonnie and Clyde?
Yeah, it was like that. And they came up to the car and they drug me out of the car. And they were really rough with me. They started beating on me pretty good. And there was this one officer that pulled his pistol out and told me that, I remember this. I'll remember it till I die. He said, "Us Georgia boys don't like you Florida boys coming up here messing around." He's got his pistol to my head. And they were hitting on me pretty hard in the ribs and everything. And I figured he was going to kill me, and I passed out. I heard like a boom and passed out. Woke up, and a police officer had come from Florida, followed the chase into Georgia. And he had intervened on my behalf, and he got out of his cruiser with a shotgun and fired it in the air and stopped the police officers from beating me up. He took me in his custody and carried me to their police station. I was extradited out of Georgia in less than 30 minutes.
Jeez.
And but the superhuman thing about it was I had, at the end, no scars at all on me.
Nothing?
Nothing. Not even scars from them beating on me.
And what about the thoughts of trying to kill yourself after that?
Well, I went through different incidents through that throughout my life, but I've come to a much better place in my life now. There were other incidents too that I was that were really large. That incident involved over 100 police officers, and there was like 15 roadblocks, separate roadblocks set up at the time.
You're lucky it wasn't worse for everybody, you know?
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that entirely. And like I was saying, I had no intention of harming anybody but myself.
I understand. Yeah. Give me a moral here. What's the moral of this story?
Well, I really don't know what the moral of the story is. I mean,
Inhale gasoline.
Right. Don't inhale gasoline. That's a good one right there. Don't huff the vapors of gasoline.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. East of the Rockies, welcome to the Coast to Coaster on the air. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hey, George, this is Jim. I'm calling from Memphis.
Yeah.
Hi. It's cold down here, too. I've been on hold since you were speaking with Mr. Patterson.
You've been on hold that long?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, George. I'm not kidding. I have not sat still this long been years. I've never met
you. You've become my hero. Nobody waits that long.
Well, tell you the truth.
I thought I got the East of the Rockies line a couple times.
No, your screener has checked in with me, woken me up a few times. Anyway,
you know what? Every time Tom checks back with you, it zeros the clock again. And I'm looking at a clock, a running time of like someone who's been on 15 minutes or 20 minutes or so. If he comes back to you, if you've been on for like 40 minutes, it shows that you've been on for 0-0 again, like you're a brand new caller. And sometimes people hang up. And then a new caller, let's say East of the Rockies, will pop in. So that's what happened. Tom did this to us.
Well, what the heck? I've been listening to your show on the phone since 11:45. But you asked this. I'll tell you, I listen to your show. I'm a writer, and I listen to your show at night when I'm working. And when you're talking about with guests about alien abductions and stuff, I can't relate. But when you were talking with Gary about rock and roll, that's my bag. You know,
that's my
team. You asked him a question about a friend of mine, a beautiful person, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah.
And Gary didn't exactly answer your question. You guys were discussing the synchronicity, which is true, of the deaths of musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And at length about this ill-fated airplane crash with Buddy Holly. You know?
Yeah.
What happened with Stevie Ray was almost exactly what happened with that airplane crash. Okay, they were doing a show in Wisconsin. His brother Jimmy was on the bill as well. And Jimmy's wife was there. And they were
1990, right?
Yes, it was. And they were going to ride back in their tour bus, two-hour ride to their hotel in Chicago. And Eric Clapton had rented out four helicopters. And Stevie was tired and said, look, why don't y'all take the three of us back to Chicago? And they said, sure. And so they said, come on, let's go. And they went up there, the three of them. Excuse me. And there was only one seat left. And Steve turned around to Jimmy and said, do you mind? I really need some sleep. And they said, go ahead. And if the other two had gotten on there, they'd be dead too.
Just like it.
And
now, there's synchronicity right there.
Well, Jimmy, I feel sorry for Jimmy. He's his oldest brother, and he has a super guilt trip to this day that they should have died too. But it's just the way it works sometimes, you know.
What do you write? What kind of stories, articles?
Well, I'm a former music journalism. I'm in the publishing business.
Well, good for you.
But I wanted to tell you something right quick. This was before you were on the show. There's another band from Texas that's recorded here a lot. ZZ Top.
I'm a friend of Billy Gibbons. I love the guy.
Did you know that Billy wrote a song about the Art Bell Show?
Yeah, I sure do. He told us about that.
Oh, he's been on the show?
Oh, yeah. Billy, yeah, he's been on.
He is fantastic.
He's a giant.
Well, I just want to say before I say goodnight that I've done thousands of interviews myself, and I think you're a fantastic interviewer, George.
All right, thanks, Jim.
All right, adios.
And I think it's Dreadmon Boogaloo is that song. And we got to get Billy back on. He is one heck of a guy. He lives in Los Angeles in Texas. First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. My name is Greg, and I'm from Champaign, Urbana, Illinois.
I know that well when I used to head out to Springfield, and then sometimes I'd head up that way.
Well, do you ever plan to come up and do a book signing?
You know, it might be for the second book that we're working on. I'm not sure. The first, the signings for the first book are starting to die down, but maybe the second one, in Springfield, and everybody can converge there.
Sure. We'd love to have you down here.
Thanks.
Anyway, I just wanted to tell you a story about that happened to me about a few days ago. I was sitting in the doctor's office with my daughter. I had to take her to the doctor. I pulled her out of school early. And we're sitting in a waiting room, and, you know, she's bored out of her skull. And I handed her a home decorating magazine. I said, here, maybe get some ideas for your bedroom, you know?
Sure.
And she's thumbing through it, and I'm doing something else. I don't remember what. And she goes, look, Daddy, electric sex. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, out of a 10-year-old's mouth, you know? And I look down in the magazine, and on the table in this really fancy house was the leg lamp from the Christmas Story movie. Okay. George, the director of that movie, died about 2 hours later.
Yeah, you're right.
And I went home and I logged on to one of the major news websites, and I clicked on that story, and up popped a picture of that director and his son, and he was holding that lamp in his arm.
Now that's synchronicity for you.
Yeah, yeah. Can I ask you, can I tell you one more thing real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Back in the early 80s, a buddy of mine and we were sitting on the tailgate of a pickup truck playing guitar. And this was down in Lake Worth, Florida. And down the street was this big hospital. And all the lights were on, it was real shining and everything. And all of a sudden, all the lights went out everywhere, okay? And the sky turned bright green for about, oh, maybe 10, 15 seconds. Then all the lights came back on. Have you ever heard of anything like that before? We looked at all the newspapers and everything the next day, couldn't find anything, nothing.
When you say bright green, was it almost like a flash?
Sort of, yeah, yeah.
Sounds like a meteorite exploded, and that may have had something to do with the electricity.
Huh.
Could have been one of those, geomagnetic pulses, basically, that they're concerned about with any kind of nuclear bomb up in the atmosphere, and that could have affected it. Especially with when you say green, to me, it either means tornado, because I've seen that, or something exploded in the atmosphere.
Yeah, and this was late at night, we'd had a couple beers, but nothing else,
Yeah, exactly.
So, but anyway, I appreciate your time, George, and I love your show. I've been listening for a couple years.
Great. Well, you keep listening, because we're going to keep going until the end of time with this program, because it just keeps moving along like a Sherman tank, getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Let's go west of the Rockies. Your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
George, listen, I've got two quick stories to tell you. The first one, when I was about 16, 17 years old, me and a friend of mine were in my mother's Volkswagen Beetle. It was a 63 Beetle.
Mm-hmm.
And I headed up this dirt road and was just basically showing off. Wound up rolling the car. Well, when it landed, it landed on its side. And we had to kick the windshield out to get out of the car.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, my best friend's just tripping out. And he's just, every word out of his mouth was, your daddy's going to kill you. Your daddy's going to kill you. Well, I weighed about 95 pounds. And I walked around, grabbed the hood of the top of the car, and rolled it back up on its tires. Then walked around the car and pulled the fenders off of the tires. And we climbed back in the car, and I drove it home. Now, that's a true story. I
was
went
it,
back later
did,
on.
Did it look dented at all by the time you were done with it?
Well, I was shocked. I went back. I lifted weights and joined the military and all this stuff. Years later, I went back and looked at the car, and I was amazed at how straight that sheet metal was on those fenders. I mean, it was incredible. But
when you thought of what your dad could do to you, you found the superhuman strength, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. My dad is a very strict military man, and I had quite a bit of fear and respect for the man.
All right, well, you just hold on, because we'll come back in a second and get your second story right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the consensus says that electrical transformers probably blew up when you saw the skies turn bright green and then the powers went out and then came back again. That's what they say. Let's go back to the phones west of the Rockies. Let's let you finish up with story number two. Hi there.
Hi. Yes. Okay, I was in my late 30s. I'm about 47 now, but I was in my late 30s, and I went in to have some sinus operation done. Well, I'm laying on the operating table, and they take coming out of the anesthesia, and I'm looking up from the table, and standing on either side of me were grays, aliens, and they're passing instruments from one to the other. Well, I've never been so terrified in my life. And all I could do, I couldn't move. All I could do was scream. And I'm screaming just going nuts. Well, they put me back under anesthesia. Well, I'm in the recovery room, and the doctor comes in, and he sits me down, and he says, do you remember anything at all about the operation? And I said, well, I basically lied to the man. I said, no, sir, I don't. He said, I'm going to tell you something. He said, I've been doing this kind of work for 15 years. And he said, you scared me half to death. He said, I have never had a patient to just go into terror like you did. He said, I've never seen that before. And I've thought about going and doing regressive hypnotism.
Yeah.
To see just exactly what was going on there. But that was as clear to me as this road is in front of my truck right now.
Or I wonder if that happened to you, like you say, in maybe it was another life. Maybe something like that happened to you, and then you had that vision.
Well, that's a possibility, I guess, but it was extremely real to me. But listen, George, I appreciate the time, sir, and
okay.
You have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
You too. We have got a great weekend coming up, don't we? First-time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. My name is Nick. I'm from Pennsylvania.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah, at Pittsburgh. So, I just wanted to talk to you quickly about deja vu in my past life, in my history of my life. Back when 93, I had my first episode of it. I was right after my great-grandfather passed, and what happened was, I think it was right that weekend after he passed, I had a kind of dream state, deja vu state, where I was walking in a glass, clear, white corridor, and it, within a week, I ended up passing out at the head of a line in school from the same thing, walking through a glass corridor. And the second time it happened was actually a prelude to having appendicitic poisoning and having my appendix removed. So the thing is deja vu with me has always come at a point where my life has got two roads, but I feel like there's something directing me by telling me what can happen.
Are you able to act on it?
Only once have I ever acted on it, and I had actually seen in a dream state one of my friends dying in a car accident, and when my friend had asked me if I wanted to go with them, I said no. I said, and you shouldn't either. I said, I know there's going to be a lot of drinking, I know there's going to be a great party, but I said, you're better off just staying home and drinking for yourself instead of for somebody else. And
Yeah. Actually
he did, and people that he was going to be driving with on the way back from the party ended up getting into a four-car pileup, and where he would have been sitting in a car, a girl died.
Oh.
And, you know,
he saved his life.
Yeah, I saved his life. But, you know, I was at the age where, you know, I had siblings who had problems with alcohol, and it was like, you know, I could have fallen in that same pocket of people. And it's like, I always attributed the decisions in my life by basically hitting the brick wall that I call deja vu, because that's what it's like. It's like every time it happens, I feel like my life is snapping at the end of a yo-yo.
Yeah, but it seems like you've been making the right choices.
Well, life is life, and you got to live it to its fullest, or you got to end up sitting like a couch potato.
You got that right. Thanks. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Oh, hi. Good morning. This
good
is Maria
morning.
Calling from New York City.
Hi, Maria.
Actually pulling you in from CKLW Windsor, Detroit. We don't get you in New York on Fridays.
Yeah, I mean, New York on Fridays, they don't run the show. Friday and Saturday morning.
Listening to you crackling in from Canada all evening. So, anyway, I just wanted to kind of put things lighthearted and tell you that you popped into a dream I had last week.
Oh, I did.
Yes, you did, just briefly. It was pretty interesting. I don't remember what, you know, happened before or after, but just these couple of seconds. I was in a university, a hallway, and it was not crowded, very, you know, quiet, studious. And I just saw two people, you know, walking towards me. And just really brief, as, you know, we got close, I kind of looked at the face and, you know, saw it was you. Said, oh, hi, George. You know, the way any fan would, you know, on recognizing you, you know, didn't want to intrude. And you just kind of, you know, looked at me and nodded and smiled. And, you know, you went on our way. But what I found was interesting was before I had seen you, I remember a feeling of being really, really happy that I was in this place, you know. And then after seeing you, thinking, oh, great, you know, I'm so glad, you know, he's here. Someone like him is here. It's just going to be, you know, more fun, you know, wherever this was. So
whatever we were doing.
Yeah, well, you know, it was definitely a university setting of some sort, you know. So I don't know what, anything other than that. But
that's funny, because I might have to go to Oklahoma to make a speech this month at a university.
Oh, yeah?
Small
Maybe
world.
Maybe it was there.
Maybe it was there as I popped into your dreams. Let's take one more before the break. West of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Hello to you, George.
Thanks.
I have a trumpet.
You have a trumpet?
Yes, I'm a musician, writer, songwriter, singer.
Okay.
You asked for a trumpet.
I wanted a trumpet. All right, you have to play something we all know,
okay.
Right?
Okay, here it comes.
Okay.
Hey, guys.
That's it?
I can't play the trumpet. You asked for the instrument I couldn't play.
Are you Marilyn Monroe from another life?
I wish, but no.
You sound like you are. I'll be back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Final segment here. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up on the air with us. Hi there.
George.
Yes, sir.
This is Treetop.
Hi, Treetop. Good to call you again.
Yes, sir. My cat, she's asleep over here, but you already know that, though.
Yes. You know, we're going to have to work on that cat, Treetop.
Yeah, I know. I'll tell you a little bit about me. I got a little quick story. I haul food-grade juice out of Mexico to Florida this time of the year. I'm down in South Texas right now. And I live in Pensacola, just north of Pensacola, if you know where that's at.
Yeah, sure do.
Anyway, my dad told me a story about this guy that used to work at the cotton gin in Atmore, Alabama. And, you know, a bale of cotton weighs around 500 pounds, give or take 50 pounds. And they used to bundle, wrap the cotton bale in wire, and it would come off the out of the packer, and it would shoot it down these rollers. And an old man would be at the end of the roller, and the bale of cotton would hit him in the back. And he'd lean over and grab the bottom of it and take it and go stack it up. He would carry that cotton all day, the bales of cotton.
That's heavy work.
Yeah, and one other
500
story.
500 pounds?
Yeah, that five, give or take 50 pounds. And he used to, that was before tow motors, you know?
Yeah.
People used to could do stuff like that, but he would take it and reach his arms behind him and grab up under the bottom of the bale, and he would take it and go over and stack it up against the wall there.
That's superhuman strength.
Yeah, and one time I was broke down right where I-10 and I-12 meet in Slidell, Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
And me and a guy was working on my truck, and a elderly couple went off an embankment and rolled down in the median on 10, like going to New Orleans. And they both got hurt, and the car was upside down, and it was in standing water.
Oh,
and the old woman, she was still in her seatbelt, and she was drowning in about a foot of water. She couldn't get out of it. And me and the guy that was working on my truck ran down there, and we rolled the car back up on its side. It was like a big 98 Oldsmobile, and we took it in just one fell swoop, rolled it back up on its side.
Man, saved their lives, huh?
Yeah.
Good for you, Treetop.
I got another story, but I'll save that for another show.
Save that for another show. And wake that cat up, Treetop. Let's go to the superhuman line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a story. When I was three, my dad had owned a Harley Davidson, and I was playing around, and it fell on top of me. And my sister, who at the time was six, picked it up off of me.
Your six-year-old sister picked up a Harley Davidson. I can barely move a Harley Davidson.
What's that?
I can barely move one of those.
I understand that. And I'm 35 today, still have a hard time. But when she was six, I was three, and I was playing around it, and it fell over on me, and she picked it up off of me.
See, those are cases where I'm convinced there's an angel involved helping her.
Oh, there's something.
Man, does she remember that?
Yes, she does. I kind of sort of remember. But she remembers it. My brother, who was coming down the back stairs, remembers it. But I remember bits and pieces of it because, like I said, I was only three. So
that's incredible. It's got to be angelic. First time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yes, welcome to the show.
Doing
good.
The Angels won tonight, so I got to play a charge for them if you don't mind.
Oh, and what do you play?
you ask for a trumpet, you're going to hear a trumpet.
Okay, you got it. That is fantastic.
That's an angel.
The horses are at the track. That's what they play at racetracks, too, right?
This is for you. We've got George on K5. Yeah, that's for George.
That's our little comeback from a commercial.
Absolutely.
They ask, you're very good. Give me one more. You're too good to let go.
Oh, well, you got to let me go if I'm going to play.
All right, go ahead.
George, I have had a pleasure listening to you, and that's a good, my first call with you. So,
well, let me tell you, likewise, you're very good.
Well, thank you, sir.
All right, appreciate you calling us and playing that for us. Dynamite. West of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
This is Gary.
Hi, Gary.
I hear the excitement in your voice when you hear about the Bigfoot. You always seem to be a believer.
I love Bigfoot stories. I do believe that there's a creature out there. I might not believe every story, but I do believe there's a creature there.
I used to log in Montana, and since then I've retired in Washington. And I think I know how you could catch one.
Oh.
There's a place in Mount St. Helens called the Lava Tubes. It's right across from the volcano.
Okay.
And the nickname for it for a long time, probably since the 50s or 60s, is Ape Caves. And I got to visiting with a park ranger there, and he said it was named by the Boy Scouts way back. And they see them there all the time, but the rangers aren't supposed to talk about it.
They're down in there, in these caves?
No, they're not in the caves, but they're all around Mount St. Helens and all around the just the woods and the brush and whatnot.
I wonder how many of them, how many of them do you think might have gotten wiped out then when Mount St. Helens blew?
Oh, I have no idea. But I do know quite a bit about them. I've had one scream at me before.
It is a sharp, shrilly voice, isn't it?
Well, the one that you have a tape of from Texas that I heard, that's a female. So you can imagine, you know, amplify that about three times.
What the male is. You know, next time we have a cryptozoologist, and I wish I would have known about this when I was talking with Jonathan Downs, but I would love to be able to have them check that story out. Especially the fact that there seems to be a pretty good basis behind the legend. East of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah.
Why, you talked a long time ago about putting a couple pills in your gas tank and pouring water in there and run on your car. You remember that? A
couple Swedish scientists claim that they've invented that pill, and then Morgus, of course, was going to do that.
I think I can shed some light on how that rumor may have started.
Sure.
Way back in the early 50s when I was a kid, my dad and his buddy used to drive to work in this old junk car, and the gas tank was rusted through, so they had a 10-gallon drum in the back seat with the hose going to the gas line. Well, they'd drive past this gas station every afternoon, and the guys would come out in the street and laugh at him because the car was old and junky looking. And so they pulled in one day on the way to work and asked for the water can and poured it in the gas tank, and they took out one of those little pop-open packs of aspirins and threw two in there and closed the lid and said thanks, and they got and left, and the guys were all standing in the street and never yelled at them again.
I think they made a TV show of something like that.
Yeah, well, this happened back in the early 50s.
That is great. That's a super story. Well, that's wrapping it up. First of all, I want to close this with one of our traditional Friday night songs from UFO Phil. But all of you have a wonderful and happy Easter with your family, your loved ones. Or if you're just by yourself, just turn on the old radio and Easter Sunday, listen to Art Bell on Coast to Coast, because we are your family.
Never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century, your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. See the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
Ah, UFO Phil. For Kyrus Coburn, Wayne Roberts, Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smith, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, have a happy Easter, everyone.